The U.S. Supreme Court today issued two rulings that affect how long criminals may stay in jail. One affects how long the government who holds illegal immigrants convicted of a crime and cannot be deported, and a second and long-awaited decision concerns the thorny issue of federal sentencing guidelines. To help us understand both these rulings, we turn now to David Savage, legal correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. David, nice to speak with you again.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Let's start with the sentencing guidelines. It's hard to talk about this without going back to another decision the Supreme Court issued last June.
Yes, they sort of created a mess last June with a decision that basically seemed to call into doubt all the federal sentencing guidelines. This was a Washington state case, and basically it was a 5-4 majority that said it's unconstitutional for a judge acting alone to greatly increase a criminal sentence. Somebody gets convicted of a crime that, say, normally would get 3 or 4 years, but the judge says there were a whole series of other aggravating facts. You didn't just rob the bank. You were the ringleader. You carried a gun, and so I'm going to sentence you to 15 years. This was a state case involving the state guidelines in Washington, and everybody said, oh, my goodness, the federal sentencing system works the same way. So between June and now, everybody has been wringing their hands saying that the federal sentencing system would be unconstitutional. But today, they sort of pulled a rabbit out of a hat, and a new 5-4 majority said the federal sentencing guidelines can stand as long as we call them guidelines. They're not sort of legal requirements. And the bottom line, I think one of these, I said to somebody at the court, one of these decisions reminds me of Emily Latella in the old Saturday Night Live skit where, you know, she talks on and the moderator, or the anchorman, then gives her one fact or questions a premise, and she says, well, never mind. This is a sort of never mind decision that the 5-4 majority said, well, on second thought, the federal sentencing system is okay as long as it's advisory and not mandatory.
Now, these federal guidelines, this was mandated by Congress. They set up the U.S. Sentencing Commission, an agency that's in the judicial branch of government. They issue these guidelines for federal judges. And basically, these, as you're saying, these are things like, well, if you committed the crime, that's one thing. If a gun was used, if a gun was discharged, if people's lives were put, all those things aggravate the crime, and each of them adds up a little bit more time on the sentence.
That's exactly right, Neil. And the law also said, though, these guidelines were mandatory for trial judges. That is, trial judges had to increase your sentence if you did these extra things. But until today, we would have thought the Supreme Court would have said, no, that system can't function because it gives too much power to the judges. Today's majority basically said, oh, yes, judges can do it, and we'll give them even more power by saying it's really an advisory. It's up to them. The law doesn't bind them. These guidelines don't bind them. So it's a victory for judges. It's a defeat for lawmakers, I think, who would want to tie the hands of judges. I don't think, this is a hard call, but I don't think it's going to have much impact on criminals one way or another because it basically allows the current system to stand.
Well, I was just going to ask about this. There have been tens of thousands of cases, judges sort of waiting to issue sentences, waiting on the Supreme Court to clarify this issue.
You're absolutely right, Neil. In fact, we all thought we were going to be writing the story that says now there's real chaos because tens of thousands of sentences are now unconstitutional because they were sentenced under this old, bad, unconstitutional system. But as I say, they sort of surprised us all and found a way to save it today.
Well, these guidelines have been in effect now for 18 years. If somebody ended up serving 30 years instead of 12 because of these added aggravated acts, can they go back now to court and say, maybe I should be let out?
I think they can try. I don't think their chances are great. Part of the opinion says appellate courts can review. You can appeal your sentence, and appellate court judges should see whether the judge's sentence was reasonable, whether the judge reasonably followed the guidelines, and nobody knows for sure what that means. So I suppose if you got a horrendous 30-year sentence for a crime that other people are getting 12 years, you could say that sure doesn't seem reasonable. But I think the notion would be that if judges have a certain amount of freedom, it's reasonable to give the judges a little discretion. So if it's 15, not 12, I don't think you'd have much of a case.
This five-judge majority on the Supreme Court, this doesn't seem to break down along the usual right-left divisions that we see. This was Justices John Paul Stevens, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and David Souter.
Yes, it was a very unusual ideological lineup, and I think one message you would take from it today, it didn't really stand the test of time, is because Justice Ginsburg didn't say a word today, didn't write anything, but she turned out to be the key vote because she joined with the one group that said last year that it's unconstitutional to give judges all this authority, and then she switched sides and joined the dissenters to say today, however, you can cure the system by tweaking it. Just say it's guidelines, not mandatory, and then it's okay.
And this is not likely to go away. I mean, Congress wrote these guidelines for a reason 18 years ago, and I think, wasn't it Justice Breyer in his decision says, of course, we don't get the last word on this. This could go right back to Congress.
Yes, he did say that, and I suppose Congress will take it up, although I'm a little unpuzzled as to what they're going to do, because if they write new rules that are mandatory, another group of the courts seem to say you can't mandate the rules for judges. So I'm a little puzzled as to what Congress will do if they try to take this up.
We're talking with David Savage of the Los Angeles Times about the Supreme Court decisions that were issued today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And there was another decision from the court today, this one about illegal immigrants and how long the government can hold them. Tell us about the background to this case.
Well, this is sort of an unusual set of immigrants because there's one set of laws that Congress toughened in the mid-1990s that basically said, if you're an immigrant and you come to the United States and you commit a crime, you are automatically deportable. But then what do you do if the criminal who is automatically deportable should be sent back to a country that won't take him? In this case, this involves some of the Mariel Boat people, the Cubans, who were sent out of Cuba in 1980, mm-hmm. and Fidel Castro doesn't want to take them back. And so they ruled today, they actually said something like this similar 3 years ago, but they basically said, if the person has served his time for a crime and is now deportable, but his home country won't take him, the government can't hold that person indefinitely. They either have to charge him with a crime, or if he served his time, eventually they have to let him go, because you can't turn this into a lifetime prison term just because you're unfortunate enough to be the kind of immigrant whose home country won't take you back.
Let him go where?
Free.
Free. Free. So this is, in effect, a green card.
Yes, but the assumption is you have served your time for the crime you committed. You know, in other words, I'm an immigrant. I've committed a particular crime. I served 3 years, which was my sentence. Now I'm ready to come out, and the government says, okay, mister, you're deportable because you came here and committed a crime. And my country won't take me back, and the government says, okay, we're now going to lock you up forever in federal prison because you're an immigrant with no country. And they said in that situation, the government has to let the person free. And Justice Scalia, who read the opinion, also made the point that Congress passed some other law recently that said, after 2001, mm-hmm. that if the person poses a security risk, you know, if it's a terrorist or something, that's another matter. If there's a threat to the nation's security, yes, the government can hold the person. But if it's a sort of ordinary run-of-the-mill, you know, some small-town criminal, who should be deported but can't be deported, then eventually the government has to let that person go free.
So, again, applying to the Mariel type illegal immigrants as opposed to the post 9/11.
Yes, I think that's right. I don't think this decision has a really broad impact. It's this certain small category of people who the government simply can't find. And they're deportable, but the government, the U.S. government, can't find any other country that will take them.
One final question, David Savage, before we let you go. Chief Justice Rehnquist, as we all know, has been suffering from cancer. He is scheduled to issue the oath of office to President Bush next week at the inauguration. What was his role in these two decisions?
Well, he's working at home, reading the briefs and the transcripts, and he voted in all these cases. He was part of the group that didn't like the decisions that went against the sentencing guidelines, and so he was part of the new 5-4 majority that saved the sentencing system. And by the way, it shows you how important it is that he's still functioning as a justice, because these cases take a five-vote majority to have a majority, And so Rehnquist's vote in the end was key in some of these decisions.
David Savage, as always, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage is the legal correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and joined us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.